This is tape three. We're talking about the building of the International Center on campus. And originally, you said the plans were...
The initial plan, Hannah wanted the building. And he told, what was his name? Began with a C. He told the university architect and the man who was designing quite a few of the buildings at the time, that he wanted an international program center, and he thought it could be put as an adjunct to the student union toward the human ecology building. There's a way of building a wing out there. Mm-hmm. And so they looked at it, and they had designed a three-story arrangement, and it was, they went ahead and built it later. It's being used for other purposes. We went over the design, Glenn and I, and Glenn was very unhappy because he didn't want this to become the university, in embracing an international dimension, could not turn it into a wing of the student union, because that made it an extracurricular kind of activity. Mm-hmm. And he said, we've got to be in the center of the campus. We got to be where faculty can reach us and graduate students can reach us. And he said, we should have our own freestanding building if we're going to have anything at all. So I remember it got pretty tough because Glenn was willing to resign. And Hannah was not a person who backed away easily. But Glenn went over. He didn't want me to be with him for this one because things could be said. And I waited back in the office, and sure enough, he came back from the meeting. He said, we did it. Yeah, we got the building. And from then on, it was a matter of designing it. And Hannah then began to make it clear that this had to be freestanding and self-supporting. He took the big chunk of money out of the international overhead bin, which is the same bin that they took the initial area studies funds out of from. In those days, we were permitted to accumulate in the central budget office all indirect cost repayments. Later, the university could not do that. Mm-hmm. We became part of the regular budget. There was no means of holding back on indirect cost earnings, overhead earnings. He took, I don't know how much of the initial cost. The figure that comes back to mind is $800,000 or so in order to pay our share of the building, which would be named, it was not to be called the International Center. Glenn insisted it be called the Center for International Programs. Mm-hmm. And that's the official name of the building. It gets glossed over now.
Mm-hmm. I think many Glenn people call it the International Center.
Glenn would roll over in his grave, I think, if he used to make the point, I don't want to see a lobby in which the students are lying around and sleeping, he said. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're about. You know, this has to be an intellectual exercise. Sure enough, I've been through the lobby and seen students lying there sleeping. Mm. And in any case, the building was built according to our approval arrangements. And we brought in the bookstore, got active with us, and designed their wing. And at the last minute, the con room was added. And that was because Hannah was a part of the CONCON.
You mentioned Glenn Taggart. Talk a little bit about his relationship. Was he a mentor to you, or was your relationship?
Glenn was about 10 years older than I guess. And he was. I always admired his broad perspective. You see, I grew up as political science and background I quoted earlier, but Glenn had a different dimension to him. He saw things in 10-year spans, 20-year spans. He didn't think in terms of what's going to happen next year. He wants to know what's going to be there 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And that was an important lesson that I learned from Glenn. And he behaved that way, too. I mean, he'd build bridges on the assumption that sooner or later we'd want to walk over them. And he had a background in international work in the Department of Agriculture. And he was a Mormon. And as a Mormon, he had experienced international service in the missionary. Assignment that he had in Czechoslovakia. He learned how to speak Czech. And he had a very serious mind. He was a graduate, PhD, University of Wisconsin, and experienced in agriculture both. So he blended what he brought to me was this sense of long-term thinking and patience with how you can make things happen, and a combination of just plain knowledge about international affairs, international relationships, not on the political science side, but on country activity. As I think he was director of the Foreign Agricultural Service before he was enticed by Hanna to come to Michigan State.
And when did he leave?
He left while I was in Pakistan. He was approached by Utah State University to be their president. And Glenn was an alumnus of that university. And he was hesitant to begin with. He started to say no, but I don't think the fact that I was waiting in the wings influenced him. I think he made his decision because he really wanted Utah State to be a great university. Mm-hmm. And I worked with him very closely after that, too, when he was at Utah State as president for whatever it was, a decade or more. We used to be opposite sides of tables reinforcing each other's viewpoint in national meetings. Frequently, that was the case. And we'd schedule our travel to Washington at the same time so that we could figure out what ought to happen in some committee or another, and then we'd see that it happened by, you know, he'd say one thing and I'd come in from the other angle, and everybody knew that was going on. Mm-hmm. He was a great guy.
And I think Taggart Hall is there now, too, I think.
Well, Utah State benefited greatly. Kellogg Foundation became more interested in Utah State. He used to tell me that faculty member, Utah State had more research money than any other university in the country. And that was a great attainment that he pursued. We always had a strong orientation toward research in the international program. Mm-hmm. And that may not be as well understood by people who are in the social sciences and the policy-oriented sciences, because we didn't have the same kinds of research going on as you'd find in, as I indicated earlier, in some of the Ivy League schools where they were putting out future diplomats and such. But we had multi-million dollar projects going on a food policy, a food security policy. Toward the end of our work, toward the end of my stay, I should say, it's advanced since then, we had the momentum built up so that we were receiving each year as much money for international studies and research as we were for international development. We were the largest university in that respect on international development, and a lot of that development work in the latter years was the work of people like Carl Eicher, Glenn Johnson, Carl Leadholm. Carl Leadholm is in economics. A couple of people in political science who began to attract that money, kind of money, and some major work that was going on in the agricultural sciences. And if you added that up, as I did I put out an annual report each year, which I don't think they do anymore, which was about a 7 or 8 page document listing all of the projects and all of the externally supported activity in Michigan State. And on an annual budget basis, not on a long-term budget basis, but annual, we were attracting as much money for that kind of activity toward the end, well, almost as much, as we did for the straightforward technical assistance.
Mm-hmm. What about the bridges to Washington?
Glenn started them and I built them from then. Of course, John Hanna was in the came in as AID administrator, and he was a bridge. Mm-hmm. He brought me in. He didn't bring me in, but he recommended me on a list to Irv Long and others in AID as the head of the Research Advisory Committee, which was a very prestigious and important committee at AID. Had about 15 people on it who passed judgment on every research project that AID got into. So he put me on the list to be considered, and I was considered, and I was appointed, and then became chairman of that group for about 10 years. That was probably, on a sustained arrangement, the best thing that could tie me and therefore the university into Washington. Kyle Eicher in ag economics and became very active in the Washington setting, including the World Bank. We had sustained relationships with Title VI through various faculty members who were on one review committee or another. And then each of the reviews that came up, either I served on it or somebody else did, I mean reviews of AID, or in the end, my final few years, we organized at Michigan State probably one of the largest reviews of U.S. development work that had ever been organized. I went out and found about $500,000 from the foundation world. And in 1988, we had a big conference on our campus at which John Hanna, who was by then retired and out of things pretty much and his mind was going, came and sat in on the banquet that we had. It was quite a thrill for his old colleagues to see him again. You know, a lot of these people were development leaders, didn't even know where he was anymore. He mm-hmm. disappeared from Italy, where he was head of the World Food Council. Mm-hmm. And once he left there, they lost track of him. And we pulled him in from his retirement on the Hanna farm, or the farm just off campus that he lived on. And that program resulted in a book. It resulted in a major report. We fed it into Congress so that Lee Hamilton and some of the others were able to say that the Michigan State study and imprint was very strong in what they tried to do when they revised AID. We were the first major study that said that environmental considerations have to be extremely important in the considerations of development. I think if any university could take credit for it coming in, Michigan State could. And it is now an extremely important part of all of our relations with the developing world, as you well know. Mm-hmm. Gus Spaeth, who was at that time the head of the World Resources Council, and then became head of UNDP, and is now the Dean of Forestry and Environmental Studies at Yale. Gus Spaeth was an active insider in our planning of the conference, and then he himself organized one of the seminars that we had in the eastern part of the country. And he pushed hard on the environmental issue. When we got going on this, it was not at the top of my list. It still isn't, but it's very high. And he insisted that we put it up there among the top three or four considerations for the U.S. development role. And he was right. And I think we can take credit for accepting his advice. And we had a number of other links into the Washington scene as a result of that effort that were very important. But it wasn't just on the development side that we were so active. It was also the international education side. We had people. I was on the International Committee of the American Council on Education for a couple of years. I was brought into the Board of Trustees of the Institute for International Education in New York, which is the leading international exchange and international studies kind of operation outside of the university world. And IIE manages the Fulbright program and all of that stuff. And I was on their board for, I think, 16, 18 years. Mm-hmm. I was the only university person really brought in from outside of New York to sit with them. And I felt it was an important thing to do, because these were important board members. There were about 20 of us. It was good for Michigan State to be seen at that table and for me to have a voice, which I exercised to see to it that universities were also considered as one of the issues as they related to the international world. I mean, these were guys like Baron Guy de Rothschild and mm-hmm. The chairman of our council was Henry Kaufman, the chief economist for one of the megabucks investment outfit. These were the people that were the board members of IIE, and they didn't know very much about what universities could do and were doing. So it was important from my standpoint to keep rubbing that information into the mix. And there were a number of others. I took leave several times from the university and I went off on two occasions as under an intergovernmental personnel agreement to participate in the national scene. The last one being this AID appointment.
When were you involved at all when Peter McPherson was in AID?
Yes, very much so. Peter was administrator when I was still head of the research advisory, when I was still chairman of the research advisory committee. So, and he was, you see, Peter worked up to the administrator's job. He had been in the White House as personnel director, not director, but as the chief, one of the chief people dealing with appointments that the White House would make once Reagan and then Bush came along. But Peter had been involved there, and as it okay. Peter was a part of, I got to know him when Title 12 was coming into focus, Title 12 of the Foreign Assistance Act. Title 12 was the vehicle that not only legitimized but encouraged an active role for universities in famine prevention and the international, the food program. He was then participating in the designation of people who would serve on the commission, the BIFAD, the Board of International Food and Agricultural Development. And Cliff Wharton, in that initial period, was president of Michigan State. So they got to know each other. If they didn't before, they got to know each other quite well at that point. Cliff became chairman of BIFAD. So as president of Michigan State and as chairman of BIFAD, the most important board that Congress had created for university work, we got to know Peter quite well. And then he became, now wait a minute, I'm confusing this. There was a sequence of events, let me put it that way, which got Peter first involved with the Title 12 committees. He was a part of the JCAD, and he was a part of the board. And then as administrator of AID, he was dealing with all of these. So I'm wrong when I refer to Cliff and Peter working in that sequence that I mentioned. After a while, when Peter was head of AID, Cliff was still chairman of the board. And at that time, there was a relationship, close relationship. And I knew him well enough so that when one of our major projects, when he was AID administrator, one of our major projects was threatened as being poured down the drain by some second echelon AID bureaucrat because of some technicality that only he had uncovered and only he understood. But he was in a position in that situation to have knifed the project because it was coming up for a budgetary review and a renewal. I was confident and comfortable in calling Peter, then head of AID, getting through to him at about 6 o'clock in the evening from East Lansing. I remember I was going into dinner at the university club and our faculty colleague came running in telling me what was happening, and that if something didn't happen on this in the next day or two, I think it was the food security project that was going to be in real trouble.
Was that in Africa?
And I knew it was a good project, and everybody else in the world did, except this one bureaucrat. And how do you leverage the bureaucrat? Well, it was too late to start playing games. I called Peter McPherson. And he took notes over the phone, and he said, I'll look into it tomorrow, Ralph. And he did. And we reversed the guy. The bureaucrat had already signed off negatively, and this project will not go ahead. But Peter saw it to it that he was reversed. So it was not a casual. He was not a casual acquaintance, and I had a lot of respect for what he was doing at AID. He was a good administrator of the agency, and he was respected by the members of the agency. At one point, they tried to get me to come in. I don't know if you want that kind of a reference.
Oh, sure.
I knew him well enough so that he tried to get one of his deputies to bring me in as a deputy to him, not to Peter, but to the other man. And so I went in for a number of interviews, but in the end, I decided I wanted to really stay with the university.
When did you retire?
I retired after I'd been here for a couple of years on leave. Not on leave, on loan under the IPA. It was 1993, I think. I came in 91, stayed on in this agency here for 2 years, and then said, that's enough. And so I pulled out of the position at the same time I retired from the university.
When you took that job at Michigan State in 1951, did you anticipate you'd be there for most of your working career?
Yes. No, I didn't. Not that I... once I took the deanship, once I saw the trend and knew where we were heading, that's the place I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. But everybody was, you know, very few people would stay on a prolonged basis as I did. I never felt that anything I did was boring or such. Everything I was involved in was was front burner within the university. A lot of faculty members may have not felt that way, but the university was in fact establishing a model and a reputation which was being picked up very widely. And there was never a dull moment, because my career was sprinkled not just with the university side, but with my years in Pakistan, and my years in Vietnam, my year in Washington, my year in New York. I went in for a year with the Foundation World and Education and World Affairs. So while I was always at the university and always wanted to come back to it when I was away, except this last retirement, I had a lot of sprinkled in other excitement that kept my life pretty interesting, and which goes into that book.
In reflecting on your career, is there maybe one single thing that you think of that stands out or is most important?
I think of all the things I was doing toward the end at Michigan State, the National Scene Conference that Michigan State held, and which I was in the middle of orchestrating, was an outstanding year of activity. I think my baptism of fire in Vietnam as part of technical assistance, and with all that followed after that, as I look back, was a set of key experiences which not only kept one on edge all the time, but which were exciting, and while we were in the midst of it, seemed to me to be very important. It did affect the lives, literally, of a million refugees to begin with, and then a lot of trainees and a lot of individuals, some of whom have been over to the United States, and we've maintained contact with. So that was an exciting part of it. I must say that the life of a what would be called a senior Ford Foundation official in those days was pretty much of a frosting on a cake. And if any of the people who have come along to be critical of the lifestyle in Vietnam, and I would say again foolishly, if they really want to see lifestyle, they ought to look at some of the foundation arrangements. Hannah told me when I was taking the foundation appointment, he said, "Ralph, you got to know." He said that you can always come back here. And then he said, "You got to know, too, that the foundation will spoil you rotten." And you know, when everybody started to laugh at my jokes, which they never used to laugh at, I realized the foundation had put its stamp on me in such a way that I had to watch out. Now, the foundation people, my old colleagues, wouldn't like that, but that's a truth that they would have to discover.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a Midwestern perspective.
Well, it is a Midwestern perspective. It truly is. Mm-hmm. And living in and working in New York that year with EWA, shortly after I came back from Vietnam in the early 60s, that was a learning experience for me, which taught me that you didn't have to really have a PhD from Harvard to associate in those circles and provide some leadership. Because I used to have a whole bunch of Harvard guys, and I use Harvard as the Ivy League mm-hmm. symbol. And most of them didn't know which end was up when it came to what we were dealing with. Mm-hmm. They did their best, and they were pretty damn good, but they had we had to provide a lot of guidance. I had to provide a certain amount.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the project, and I appreciate the time that you've spent in sharing your insights.
Yeah, I hope you got what you'd like.
Very much so.
Now you'll have to read my book.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it. Thank you, yeah.